Thanks, Aaron. And thank you all for joining us this morning. In a moment, I'm going to describe a qualitative study that we did of first responders post-Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. Before I do that, though, I do want to give you a little bit of background information on the Children's Health Fund. I guess I'm supposed to officially say I have no relationships, financial relationships to disclose before I start. So just a little bit of background, because it's very important before I get into the and describe the study to let you all know what the Children's Health Fund is about. The Children's Health Fund is a nonprofit organization out of New York. We're a national organization. We're based in New York, but where we're committed to providing health care to the nation's most medically underserved children and their families through the development and support of innovative primary care medical programs, response to public health crisis as we did post-Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, and the promotion of guaranteed access to appropriate health care for all children. We have an advocacy arm where we help translate clinical practice into informed policy. And the Children's Health Fund has been around now 21 years, and we currently have 22 national network project sites throughout the country, including three post-Hurricane Katrina that were established post-Hurricanes Katrina and Rita in the Gulf Coast, one in Baton Rouge, New Orleans, and southern Mississippi. The other things you see on the map here is some of the work we're doing where we're taking what some components of the projects and for the first time expanding them and to other sites. For instance, in Philadelphia, we work with a nursing clinic there to provide assistance with referral management. In Colorado, we have some projects there that's focused specifically on transportation. Most of our work throughout the country is done through mobile medical units. These mobile units are generally about 38 to 44 feet long, and as you can see in the diagram here, the mobile medical units often have at least two examining rooms, waiting area, nursing station, and a small lab room. And I wanted to give you as this background to understand some of the background information about the study participants in the study I'll describe in a moment. We also have community support and resiliency units, or mobile mental health units, that we started post-Hurricane Katrina and Rita. Each of those sites I described in the Gulf Coast, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, southern Mississippi, have both a mobile medical and a mobile mental health unit or community support and resiliency unit. And we also have dental units throughout the country. Operation Assist was initiated as a disaster recovery effort in response to Hurricane Katrina, and it's really evolved in a comprehensive program where we not only focus on the Gulf, but we also work on disaster preparedness throughout other parts, through other national network projects. It's a collaboration between the Children's Health Fund and National Center for Disaster Preparedness at the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University, where my friend and colleague, Dr. David Abramson, works out of. And this is the last, well, second to last slide on background information. All I wanted to show with this slide is the complexity and the number of steps necessary that one has to take before one participates in disaster response. There are legal, logistical, and specific communications barriers that one has to overcome in order to be able to be part of a team that responds post-disaster. And I'm not getting into all this, but just to say, you know, all of these steps had to be taken, and we were able to actually work on these pretty quickly, in part through the help of our friend in Louisiana, Aaron Brewer, and other state agencies in Louisiana and Mississippi that were able to help us overcome this, and we were able to be on the ground within the first week post-Hurricane Katrina and Rita, and then we have remained there establishing these three permanent projects. So this is the last two slides before I get into the actual study. What's important here is that what we found in our qualitative assessment participants is that it really reinforced a lot of what's come out of the literature since then, with maybe a little bit of a twist in some specific areas. But a couple key points. The competency requirements and training protocols for disaster preparedness are neither consistent across institutions nor states. That's what we know from the literature post-Hurricane Katrina and other disasters. Hospitals and pharmacies outside of areas hit hard were often able to provide some legal and resource-oriented support to response efforts. And efficacy of institutions such as FEMA and the Red Cross were reportedly varied. And I'm only putting them two up there, but you could say this about just about any federal or state institution, that there were varied responses about, and you'll see that in some of the quotes I have from our study. And specific barriers to care post-disaster, access to care, supply of pharmaceuticals is a theme that keeps coming up, communication difficulties, lack of patient health care information, as we think we all know, and lack of insurance. So now the study. So this was a qualitative study, semi-structured telephone interviews with physician first responders, conversations recorded via audio tape with verbal consent, and the interviews were all transcribed and evaluated for major themes, and that's what we're going to show in a moment. I guess I should disclose that I was actually one of the study participants. The PI, Dr. David Kroll, the original PI, he is no longer the Children's Health Fund, but I've been working with him to do as unbiased evaluation of these and on the interviews. It was all physician staff members, either pediatricians or med-peds physicians. All of us were in a national network, and that's very important. So that's why I showed the picture of the mobile unit to begin with. All of these physicians had experience, years of experience, working off of mobile medical units with underserved pediatric populations. So it's very important to understand that before I describe some of their responses. Obviously, they all participated in our Operation Assist effort, and they either served in Louisiana or Mississippi post-hurricanes in this study. We also had responses in Texas, but for here, they were either Louisiana or Mississippi. So I'm going to go ahead and just start giving some of the thematic responses, and I'll go ahead and read you some of the direct quotes. For previous experience, and the numbers aren't going to add up. Again, this is a semi-structured interview, so the numbers don't necessarily add up. When asked about any prior disaster relief training or preparation, two specifically stated that they had training, post-disaster type training beforehand, and four said no trainings but some sort of related exposure. Of three that had prior disaster response experience, not training, but experience, they thought it was very helpful that they have had that. So from one of the interviewers who had no preparation, this is what he or she said. No, I had no preparation or training for working with evacuees. It was pretty much the same thing that I do every day. Because these were displaced evacuees, they were very similar to a lot of the homeless populations that we deal with, or domestic violence populations that we deal with. They don't have a lot of belongings or a lot of identifying information. And the reason I bring this up first again is to emphasize the fact that maybe this is one of the limitations I'll bring up later on in the study, that because these study participants all had these kind of experiences and were already used to working these populations, it kind of skews the results a little bit. So in terms of initial thoughts or concerns, there were a lot of varied responses about this. At least five of the participants thought there was a lot of chaos and poor coordination, particularly among agencies. Mental health needs and issues came up with at least three study participants directly when asked just initial thoughts or concerns, and later on certainly with more specific questions. Violence at some of the sites was a concern for two. Chronic care needs was a theme that came up in the initial response and certainly later on. And pharmacological needs that goes hand in hand with that was also. So I'm just going to read to you some of the responses. When asked if the people coming in were relatively healthy or chronically sick, the response was really amazing. Their health status was really poor because they tended to have a lot of obesity, diabetes, and hypertension. And goes on to say a lot more, but then towards the end. And one of those things that none of us were really aware, used to working with, is methadone. And our homeless population is not on methadone. And so here are all these people coming and looking to me to try to figure out how they were going to get their methadone. And I bring that up because I actually heard at a talk yesterday, too, that that was a big concern about managing people that had addictive disorders and needed methadone or didn't need it, and it was drug-seeking behavior. It was hard to differentiate that, and a lot of the responders emphasized that they didn't have that kind of training. So specific clinical concerns post-disaster, mental health issues was a recurring theme, pre-existing medical health issues, and then exacerbation of health problems, an array of different ones, dermatological, respiratory, acute care, mental health again, and chronic medical problems. One respondent said that, emphasized that, and pharmacy became a huge, huge part of our job. I was again thrust back into having to decide how to treat persistent hypertension, uncontrolled COPD, uncontrolled diabetes with medication that they were all on, but I didn't have any, so I had to play pharmacist. One of the things that I didn't say at the beginning, our mobile medical units, there are pharmacies on board, and the healthcare team will dispense medication when necessary. So a lot of them had this experience, some did not. Not all the mobile units practice the same way. Another respondent said, so clinically, we were seeing a lot of skin-related problems. We're seeing a lot of inhalation-related problems. But I think that was magnified, what was the exacerbation of ongoing, long-standing problems. So folks who were having major problems with asthma, allergies, chronic care issues. Out on a mobile unit, we saw some folks who had chronic issues. We saw a girl who was seizing from a seizure disorder. We saw several other kids who had chronic problems with asthma or other issues who had been receiving specialty care but no longer had a medical home. And another respondent, it was just sort of amazing, really, in that I guess I was just seeing a whole lot of mental health. You know, it was just a whole lot of physical things where you have people with, there's inaudible information here, but just filling in this whole room and people trying to make sense of what had happened to them. There was a lot of euphoria, or at least the first few days that I was there, because we were so glad to be out. I think that the most impressive thing was that we didn't see a lot of major medical issues. This is very interesting that other respondents are saying they're seeing a lot of medical issues, and this one is saying they didn't see a lot of medical issues, but people had mental health problems and wanted to tell stories. And again, I'll bring this up later, one of the limitations of this study, although useful, is that we had people that were responding at different times, and since it was only 12 respondents, it was really hard to gauge what was important. But I think the important thing here, depending where you responded, whether a convention center, a community site, a makeshift tent, the experience could be very different, some with more mental health issues. And when you responded, was it a week after the hurricane or was it a month afterwards? All influenced the experience. So when we talk about interagency collaborations, I think we've all heard that a lot of problems, and I put up FEMA and Salvation Army and Red Cross here only because they were the ones that were specified, but you could probably say this about just about any agency. I think the most important thing is that there were varied responses. See here that three respondents said there was no presence or interaction with Red Cross, but two others said communication with them was satisfactory. FEMA, no presence or interaction or indirect presence, and Salvation Army, no presence or interaction. And from one of the respondents, the Red Cross played an active role. They were there. Also, the Medical Service Corps played an active role, and they go on to be very positive, actually, about their experience with the Red Cross. So, again, consistent with the other literature, there's a lot of varied responses about these interagency collaborations and working with them. So the barriers. Specific barriers is, again, the mental health needs. It's a recurring theme. Continuity of care was a big challenge for many of the providers. Finding the correct medication, access to that medication was a challenge. Subspecial care access, when the primary care providers did identify a problem that needed immediate attention, that was a huge challenge. And again, communication, not only between agencies, but also between providers and subspecialty providers. From one of the respondents or study participants, people were just trying to take care of their pre-existing conditions for the most part, or new medical ones such as asthmatic exacerbations that could have been related to the storm, cellulitis, local wound infections, People were making sure they had their shots, and they also needed pharmaceuticals. That was probably the biggest thing. People needed medications that they didn't have access to. That was a big challenge. And staffing and supplies. Seven of the respondents felt they had adequate staff. Now, these were teams put together by the Children's Health Fund. Not necessarily everyone on the teams was from the Children's Health Fund or National Network, but seven of the respondents felt that they had adequate staff, and at least six felt that they had adequate supplies, which I think is pretty significant. Again, part of this is based on our experience with working with underserved populations off of mobile medical units. The biggest identified needs when it comes to staff is that there was a need for a social worker or a community resource person liaison because most of the, or all the participants in this case were not from the local areas, and they were often at a loss about where to send children and families once they identified with specific medical, mental health, or other type of needs and not understanding what the community resources were. In terms of supplies, pharmacies and pharmaceuticals and vaccines were a recurring theme for a number of them. So again, while I think the study was very helpful in helping, if not reinforce, identify some of the challenges providing post-disaster primary care services, we do have limited information about the study participants, except to say that they're all have pediatricians or med peds have had experience working off of mobile medical units for a number of years with underserved pediatric populations. But we don't know enough about we don't have the information about when they responded and where exactly they went, or more information about how many years of experience and clinical variation in clinical skills, if there were any. Of course, it's a small n, like most of these type of qualitative studies. There can be some bias and with a small n, and when it's a skewed population like this. But nonetheless, I think that we did learn some lessons from this. Number one, that disaster relief training preparation is helpful to post-disaster primary care providers. Of the three respondents that responded to this, they made it very clear that their previous experience on this type of thing was very helpful. Managing of pre-existing medical and mental health conditions is a post-disaster priority and challenge, and that was reinforced not only with this study, but also our anecdotal experience post our establishment of the three projects there, that pre-existing medical and mental health conditions for the patients that we saw was a huge challenge and something that needs to be worked on for the future, particularly the pharmaceutical needs. And then coordination of interagency efforts is important and lacking post-disaster, but there were varied responses to this. But overall, that could be improved. And then we just recently responded to Hurricane Ike, and we're in communication with Aaron on Hurricane Gustav. And certainly there's been a huge improvement in that across the board about how the different agencies communicate. And I'm glad to say that we were not needed very long in Texas because of the work that was done there, and they emphasized their experiences with Hurricanes Katrina and Rita in the Astrodome was very helpful to them, and they were much better prepared. So I think we're definitely a long way 3 years later from where we were. Okay. Thank you very much for attention there.